Pastor Rick Warren was back at the pulpit in California for the first time since his son committed suicide.
I'm afraid of nothing. I'm coming out of this fearless.
Warren received a standing ovation at the Saddleback Church. His son died 4 months ago. He finds comfort that he is now in heaven.
When people die, a lot of times they think about, they have a celebration, they celebrate the happy life of that person. Matthew did not have a happy life. He had a tender heart and a tortured mind.
In April, Matthew Warren, after a lifetime of struggle with depression, shot and killed himself in what Warren at the time called a momentary wave of despair. Glee cast member Mike O'Malley says Corey Monteith was a leader on the show.
He was the fictional quarterback on that show, and he was the very real quarterback on that set.
O'Malley played his stepdad on the Fox TV show. Corey Monteith died earlier this month in Canada of a drug overdose. I'm Ed Donahue, AP Radio News.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Everybody get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20. Because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the food and wine variety show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now. Good morning, everybody. This is Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast, and I am sort of beastless today. David Nellis is taking a vacay day, and I have top chef finalist Mike Isabella in studio with us today. He is going to be my co-host. Say hello, everybody.
How's it going, everybody?
All right. There we go. We got Mike Isabella in studio, and we have a full studio today. It's going to be a ton of fun. Now, if you've ever been to Minibar or Del Campo or Blackjack and Pearl Dive, then you know the work of Core Design. In today to talk about how a chef and an architect work together. We have Allison Cook and Christopher Pelley of Core. We're going to talk about all the kinds of work they've done and how they work with a chef, like a Mike Isabella sort of thing, right?
Sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'll open up some more restaurants.
Okay, here we go. Ooh, good. All right. Yeah, coming off of just opening up Capnos and G, Mike is already ready to roll out more. Mike is also the chef honoree for the American Cancer Society's Fit for Hope DC Challenge. Right?
Yeah.
I can't believe you did that.
Yeah, no, I know. And, you know, I'd also like to welcome today, you know, Sarah Cox from the American Cancer Society, who invited me to be the chair for Fit for Hope and Taste of Hope. And
do you think she was saying, like, maybe you need to lose a little weight? I mean, what do you think she was saying there, Mike?
She probably was thinking I needed to lose a little weight, but I think everyone was saying that, including myself.
Okay.
But it's been awesome. So it's been a great start so far.
All right, do you want to intro your partner in crime next?
Yeah, I mean, next to me I got my my partner and good friend and my chef of Capnos next to me, George Pagonis. So
how's everybody doing this morning?
All right, well, we're gonna get into it, George. You've got a good radio voice.
Oh,
sounds
thank you.
Good. All right, and later in the show we'll be talking to Will Artley of Pizzeria Orso. He brought in a terrific array of brunch items. He's also doing Fit for Hope, and it doesn't look like what he brought in is really good for a diet, but we're going to be digging into it nonetheless. And lastly, joining us, fresh from Tales of the Cocktail in New Orleans, which we were all there with him, Derek Brown from the brand new Mockingbird on the Hill. Of course, you know him from the Columbia Room and Passenger. He's already finished a glass of sherry. He's way ahead of us. It's going to get crazy here in the studio. So, Derek, come on up to the mic.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing really great.
Good. All right, so sherry, a sherry bar. I mean, there's not a lot of those around. What was the idea to open up a sherry bar in D.C.? I mean, were people clamoring for a sherry bar? We must have a sherry bar?
Yeah, it was an unbelievable just chorus of people asking for sherry bars.
That's what I thought.
So please, one at a time.
Wait online. Everybody
now,
get online.
No, I have a sort of bad habit of opening places I love and things, you know, showcasing things I love and not necessarily caring too much about, you know, what's popular or what's kind of in vogue. So Well, you know, I remember a long time ago when cocktails were sort of still developing a little bit, and I caught the bug for that. Shortly thereafter, I caught the bug for sherry, because sherry is a huge part of classic American cocktails. So having learned that, it was like a song that got stuck in my head. And so I went to Jerez. I visited Spain, where sherry comes from. Mm-hmm. And I realized that there were so many misconceptions about sherry. First of all, the one that you're drinking right now is extremely dry, right? It's almost tart on the finish.
Right. It's almost cognac-y.
Yeah. And I think that most people's image is something of a very sweet grandmother drink. But the history of sherry has a lot more to do with pirates than it does with grandmothers. So I want to kind of showcase that. I want to show people this is an amazing product. It is, in my opinion, the best food pairing wine in the world. And so we opened our doors to try to get people to see there's something different about sherry than they think.
Well, I actually went to Comey when you were there.
Right.
And we did a sherry dinner.
2007, I
right.
remember.
It was really fascinating because what I knew of sherry really was like, is Harvey's Bristol Cream even a sherry? Is that real?
It is. It is. And it's one of the ones
like
that...
Like my mother used to drink that when I was young.
And as I recall from that dinner in 2007, it was Javier Hidalgo was the guy, and I think he was quite smitten with your table. So.
Oh, well, I had a good table. What can I say? But so you also said that sherry is a part of cocktails. Now, I think of sherry as a wine.
Well,
so
that's the thing is,
where am I wrong?
All these misconceptions kind of abound, and no surprise, because it's from a very small area in the southwest of Spain. Mm-hmm. And so the thing that makes sherry so interesting and connects to the United States is that it was the first wine to come to the Americas. It was literally on Christopher Columbus's ship. Hmm. And it was a big part of the sort of seafaring, exploring culture. And it made its way to colonial America, where it was a big part of drinks. All the way up to the 19th century, when it became one of the most popular drinks in the United States, was a sherry cobbler. And so...
That doesn't sound good. That sounds like sweet and...
It's a little sweet. The sherry cobbler is definitely sweeter than, say, just a straight Fino or Manzanilla sherry.
Okay.
But there's other drinks with it, like the Adonis or the Bamboo, all these great classic cocktails that
we have the Adonis in the studio.
That's right.
Why do they call it a cobbler? Isn't it like a pie?
I don't know which came first, like the pie or the cobbler itself, because technically it's like to cobble something is to mix it together,
okay.
Right?
Like to cobble shoes.
Yeah, I should have known that.
Yeah,
should have known that.
Let me take that question back. We'll get back to his school.
Cobblers aren't Greek, so it's
all right.
Okay.
Well, just tell us quickly what's in this glass.
So this is by Cesar Florido, a very small producer from a little seaside town called Chipiona. It's about 40 meters from the sea. So when I went to visit him, an amazing character. We walked right to the Cruz del Mar, which is across where all of the explorers left from. To go across the world. And it was just such a beautiful moment. But this wine itself is just so nice and light and crisp.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And it's floral and citrusy, and it goes great with food, all kinds of food. So.
Excellent. All right. Well,
there's
come
some
back
olives,
to...
too. Try it with that.
Okay, great. Olive.
I like the brittle. I like the sweetness.
All right. So, George, we are now going to bring you back.
Yes.
And talk to you about the opening of Capnos and G. But you're just involved with Capnos?
I'm involved in the whole operation, but I focus more towards Capnos.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been running around. We've all been running around like crazy. But me and George, you know, worked together for years mm-hmm. on and off. Ignacio Tina, he was one of my chefs.
Mm-hmm.
He helped me open up, Bandolero. He ran Graffiato. And now he's at Capnos. So,
and what is your role, George, at Capnos?
Chef de cuisine.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, are you working? You and Mike work closely together on the menu. And
yeah, we've been developing the menu since like mid to late August
mm-hmm.
When we went to Greece, and then during my time at Graffiato, we've just been testing the menu nonstop. So.
And well, given your heritage, were there certain things that you wanted on the menu? And given Mike's, you know, working at Zatina, I mean, how did you guys collaborate on the kinds of dishes that you decided together?
The number one thing is whatever I did at Zatina, I didn't want to do again.
Right.
It's just like, you know, I didn't want to be compared to anything. Mm-hmm. So Zatina is a different beast. It's Lebanese, it's Turkish, it's
right.
Greek. You know, we're Greek, we're Northern Greek, we do a little Aegean. You know, we're kind of from all over. So we did a lot of traveling through Greece, you know,
mm-hmm.
from the islands all the way up to like Thessaloniki into Turkey, just to kind of get some roots, you know, and that kind of fell into the way we designed it and menued it. But, you know, we wanted to focus on whole animals that has a lot of that stuff that goes on up in northern
Greece.
But
is that classic in northern Greek dining? Like, if I were to go to northern Greece, I mean, would I see a lot of whole spit dining? Yep. I mean, is that how people eat?
It's, well, there's not like an abundance of it, but it is like tradition. It's like a tradition for them to do it there.
Okay.
And it's usually done on like special occasions. So we're trying to like bring that to a, you know, a la carte restaurant, mm-hmm. which is not really done.
So no, it's not. I mean, you're not.
That's like the hard part about what we're doing.
Well, what is it? Why is that hard? Explain it.
Because of the timing, like how much, how hot things need to be, like what time to get the animals on.
Mm-hmm. How much wood to put into the thing, how much smoke does it need to receive. You know, working with whole animals, there's all different cuts.
Are we talking about, like, when I think of a whole animal, I think of like a whole, like a big, like I think of a cow, like a big animal, but that's not what you're doing. So these animals are, they're smaller, right?
They're around 30 pounds, the goats and the lambs and the pigs around like, you know, anywhere from 28 to 32 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And we put them on multiple times in the day and they keep on going. And we kind of stop the grill and went in the rotation and we're carving off legs and then carving it up for portions for the guests. Mm-hmm. And you have to really be, you have to really know how to control that heat and that wood. So you're not serving dry meat or you're not serving undercooked meats and things like that. So that's the toughest part about it. But yeah, when we were in Greece, I mean, we went to a lot of places that had spits. Mm-hmm. They weren't, there was more like parts of the animals or like the innards.
Like a whole leg.
Yeah, like a primal cut of the animal.
Like the innards?
Or the
what
shoulders.
Do they do, skewer the innards?
It's called coconutsy. They take all the innards and they wrap them in intestines and they skewer and they spit roast it. So it's
and that's
like,
usually,
so
that's
lost
usually.
Me. You just totally lost me. I know, like as a foodie, you're supposed to like love that stuff. I don't love that stuff.
But coconutsy is like traditionally done like mainly during Easter, but some places do it
and
more
what is
often.
It?
It's all the innards.
It's what he just told you. The
like
innards.
Heart, kidneys.
Oh, yeah, kidneys, liver.
I know my liver. It's
yeah, cute. But if you get it sometimes when you go to some of those old world places, you get it and it is cooked all day. And that liver is, you know, not the best thing to eat.
None of that sounds like the best thing to eat. You're not serving
it.
That there, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, we go to 35 animals a week minimally.
Okay. Yeah. So people are ordering it?
Yes.
A lot.
Every table.
Yes, last
every
night
table.
We almost ran out of lamb.
Really?
It was insane.
Tell me about the, but you're also serving a fish, right? Mm-hmm. Is that salt baked?
We have two. You can, I mean.
All right, there's a salt baked fish, which is like a 1.5 pound dorade that we're doing right now. And then we also do the wood grilled bronzino.
Okay. And are you looking to change that fish? Like, is it more seasonal?
Yeah, right. We're going to change it. But right now, like, since we just opened, we're going to try to stay consistent with one fish. And then, like, as we're progressing and the restaurant kind of, like, cools off, then yes, we will bring in different fish.
Okay. Yeah, and those two fish, Bronzino and Dorade, are probably, you know, we're getting them from Turkey and Greece, depending on which purveyor. Mm-hmm. But those are the two most popular fish coming from those regions, from the Mediterranean.
Well, and they're well known.
Yeah.
I mean, in this area, so it's not like you have to, it's not a hard sell, do you know what
absolutely.
I mean, when you're trying new fish. Let's just go quickly over to G, which just opened.
G Sandwich Shop just opened on Friday. We've been for 2 days. I'll be heading over there right when we get out of here to go make some sandwiches.
So is it an all hands on deck kind of thing? Like, George, were you there on Friday too?
I showed up at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Okay, and were you guys surprised by all the people who were there?
Yeah.
How quickly did you run out of sandwiches?
90 minutes, 240 sandwiches. I ran out of sesame bread, and I wasn't gonna half of my sandwiches go on the sesame.
Okay.
So I didn't want to just offer half the menu, and so that's that. But yeah, we opened the sandwiches rolling. Saturday we opened up our tasting menu.
Next Saturday,
$40 four courses, and then following Sunday we'll be doing Sunday gravy.
Right.
The Jersey style.
Okay, so let's go back to the dinner that you'll be doing there. So it's a price fixed menu.
Price fixed menu.
Who's cooking? So, like, are you at Capnos? Like, where are you?
I'm at Capnos.
You're
during
at Capnos.
This. And then Elliot Drew is going to be the chef at Cheese Sandwich Shop. He's the one who's going to be, like, coming up with the menu every day.
Yeah,
and, okay.
We work on it together. And I go back and forth. When we're busy at Capnos, I'm on the line. And when we're busy at G, I'm on the line there.
Okay.
So it's pretty crazy.
It's two different restaurants, but at the same time, we do coordinate everything because there's like lamb sandwiches and goat sandwiches and pig sandwiches, and that all comes from the spit.
Sure.
So we have to start those up at like, let's say 5 o'clock, so they could be ready by midnight so they can have them for like the next day.
Okay. And then just Sunday gravy. For people who don't know what that is.
Well, I mean, we call gravy in America now, but we never called that when I was growing up in Jersey. It was just, you know, Sunday, usually every single Sunday from...
Okay, all my Italian friends called it gravy in Jersey. Everybody called it gravy.
Well, we call it gravy, but we don't say, I'm going home for Sunday gravy.
Oh, no, I never heard that.
Yeah.
But, like, that's what they called sauce.
Yeah, once you put meat into tomato sauce, it becomes gravy in our world. And that's what we eat. I mean, 95% of the first 20 years of my life, every Sunday was... was gravy, you know, and then you can, for the rest of the week, you have it. But it's sausages, it's meatballs, it's pig's foot and pork shoulder that you get served on Sunday gravy. But when you come in, it's all classes. It's tomato and mozz, it's fried calamari and marinara, it's, you know, Caesar salad, garlic bread, broccoli rabe. A choice of red or white pasta, pomodoro, Alfredo, and then a bowl of gravy, and then you get to pick, you know, New York cheesecake at the end or some Zeppelis.
Sounds terrible. Sounds like my kind of Sunday. All right, we have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to be digging into some more Sherry, learning about a little bit of architecture, and talking about being fit for hope. This is Nikki Nellis. David Nellis is out. Micah Isabella is in. We'll be back in just a sec.
Come celebrate Central Farm Market's fifth anniversary season with the freshest produce, dairy, baked goods, fresh fish, meats, poultry, and specialty foods around. Enjoy music, wine tastings, cooking demos and classes, and kids' activities at two great locations, Sundays 9 to 1 in downtown Bethesda and Saturdays from 9 to 2 in North Bethesda, Rockville. Come out and see for yourself why Washingtonian and Bethesda magazines hail the markets as the best in the metro area. To learn more and sign up for the weekly e-blast, visit www.centralfarmmarkets.com. The two central locations in downtown Bethesda and North Bethesda, Rockville are kid-friendly and dog-friendly, have plenty of parking, and great food. For a listing of food artisans, events, and exact addresses, check out www.centralfarmmarkets.com. That's centralfarmmarkets.com. See you this weekend.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserve. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
In times of joy, in moments of grief, broadcasters come through, even when all else fails. Today, with more ways than ever to experience the moments that transform our lives, Americans still choose broadcast radio and television more than all other media combined. We are the local broadcasters of radio and television, reaching more people, touching more lives. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
This is Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast, and today I have my guest co-host, Mike Isabella, sitting next to me. We're talking about all sorts of things here in studio. Oh my God, Will Artley, just come up to the mic for 1 second and tell us what that is that you have brought in to the studio.
We have a bacon sticky bun that we just unveiled at Pizzeria Orzo in Falls Church.
Okay.
So it's part of our new brunch that we just started doing about 3 weeks ago.
Terrific. Okay, we'll dig into that in
a little
bit.
That looks great. Make sure Derek eats a bunch of those.
I actually brought them for you guys.
So. There's a little competition going on in studio. Of course, we'll get to that later. But right now, I want to bring in Allison Cook and Christopher Pelly of CORE. They are the guys behind a lot of restaurants that you're dining in and around the city. Vic Albizu's Del Campo, Jose Andre's Mini Bar, Jeff Black's Blackjack and Pearl Dive. I think you know a lot of what they do. Guys, welcome. Thanks for coming in today.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks.
You know, with Mike opening up Capnos and G just 2 weeks ago, I thought it would be really interesting to sort of talk about how a chef/restaurateur works with people in the architecture world to give his idea. I mean, because chefs don't know anything about architecture. I mean, according to Mike earlier, chefs don't even have an education. Mike doesn't. And so, you know, how do you go from hearing this, like, fantastic idea of I want this and I want that and I want all these fabulous things and implementing it and making it happen?
They're really all different. If you were to say that every chef was identical, I mean, that's...
Oh, no, I'm not saying that any of them are. Some of them are reasonable.
Oh, yeah, and absolutely. And to that extent, the levels of, you know, knowledge of architecture or just, you know, how much, you know, imagination there is varies. And it's all about how you draw out those ideas, challenge, you know, the notions that you might have and try and push, go forth with, you know, with the different concepts, you know, to make something real.
And these guys all have you know, the energy in the room here that these guys bring and the excitement they have about food and their concepts really inspires us as well. So we start by just sitting down and saying, like, what is your vision for the place? Because the most frustrating thing for us is that you have a client that's like, oh, I like blue or I like green, so just design me a restaurant around that.
It's like, no, that's not how it works. Who are like that.
That's what I said with Cop Knows. I like orange.
Yeah.
And they came up with that.
Just don't tell him it's dark, because right. He gets really upset. But let's talk about some of the projects you have worked on and how you took a vision and made it a reality. Like, let's take Minibar, for example. Mm-hmm. I mean, here you had this already very well-known, well-publicized concept, and you had a new venue to create for Jose Andre. How did you go about doing what he wanted?
It's their team is, I mean, they cultivate this, they have this culture of imagination there. They, you know, through the food and through the design of all of their spaces, and mm-hmm. They're really pushing the envelope in every way. And so it's really great to work with people like that. It's refreshing.
All right, tell us who's tough.
Who's
Let's
tough?
Be gossipy. Nobody's
tough.
Listening.
Well, who's tough I'll to work with? I'll tell you who There's... is tough but fantastic to work with was Jeff Black and his team.
Shocker.
I know. Well, mm-hmm. you know Jeff well, right?
Right,
so
yeah.
he comes but he with also an extremely knows, strong vision. Yeah.
But he also knows he's really smart. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like he knows his stuff really, really well.
His whole team is inspiring to work with. And I think working on Pearl Dive and Blackjack was the biggest learning experience for me as mm-hmm. a designer, because they just understand the food process so well. The product is so quality, and he has such a strong opinion about what he wants his places to feel like. And that's why Pearl Dive and Blackjack, I think, are so successful as two completely separate concepts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about this sense of discovery and excitement and what you find upstairs.
So. Well, Mike, I want to bring you into this. Let's mm-hmm. talk about how the food inspires the look of your place. I mean, when you were putting together Capnos and G, did you have any sort of sense of how you wanted the place to look as far as how it showed off your food?
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, obviously I'm a chef, so, you know, my focal points, you know, even starting with Graffiato, is open kitchens. You know, I want to welcome my guests that come into my restaurant into my world.
Mm-hmm.
And Cop Knows, the number one thing was I wanted to put on a show for my guests that come in. And that started with having these monster spits behind my line with all these animals rotating and chickens and shoulders. And then I put my expediting line in the middle of the bar. Mm-hmm. So people are sitting 12 inches
away.
But
was that your vision mm-hmm. before? Like, before you sat down with your architect?
100%.
Okay.
100%. I mean, I knew what I wanted. I knew the color tones I wanted to go with. I knew the feel that I wanted to go with. I mean, that comes with travel. That comes with knowing food. And, you know, and I just worked with the architects to, like, you know, to kind of get my vision. And, you know, they did a great job of capturing what I wanted. And that's what I'm assuming what, you know, you guys do is you just capture. I tell them a million things that I have going on in my head, and they try to take the strong ones and kind of put it together and bring it all together.
So how many designs do you guys do? Like, when you sit down with a different restaurateur mm-hmm. and you create a design, do you do several different kinds, or do you just sort of pick one and say, this is what we're hearing from
it
you?
It really depends on the approach. I mean, sometimes, you know, there's a great concept that's coming from, you know, a chef or whoever it is. And sometimes we're also brought in to just sort of explore, you know, if someone mm-hmm. wants us to do the kind of the big imagination.
Mm-hmm.
So it can vary a lot.
And do you say to them, like, I want to know your menu. I want to know what you're serving.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. I mean, we need to know all that stuff.
So heavily linked in the flow of the food from the kitchen, like with Cop Knows. It's so open. And how the guest interacts with the food product and what you want them to see of the process and how the food gets expedited to the guests and everything is a really, really big part of
just
the layout.
The theater of the food. And it's actually something in D.C. that has been growing, and it's part of the growing culture of food around here. So
mm-hmm.
where your guest is expected, they expect more out of a restaurant than they may have 10 or 15 years ago. The food credibility of seeing the open spits and that kind of thing. And that all feeds into the architecture. It's all part of the space now. It's not just a kitchen in the back. It's part of something that's in the theater of the restaurant.
Well, and is that now a national trend? Or, I mean, is that just a trend in D.C.? I mean, what are you seeing as some of the trends as far as kitchen design? Or is everyone so different that there is
It's very different. But, yeah, I think that the obviously understanding where your food comes from, how it's cooked, the source. I mean, that was a big deal when Christopher and I first worked together on Founding Farmers, the very first location in D.C., Lead Gold Restaurant, first in D.C.
Right,
so,
right.
And that was really the beginning of that movement of people just wanting to know, where's it coming from?
Right.
You know? So that's, I think, kind of built over the last
few
years.
When you say where it's coming from, are you talking about recycled products, reclaimed products, things of that nature? Mm-hmm. I mean, that seems to be big, not just in, that seems to be big in all areas of building. Is it big in the restaurant world? I mean, are chefs and restaurateurs coming to you and saying, you know, I want recycled wood and I want, you know, I want to reuse items? Is that important?
It's a, it's a very popular thing recently, and it feeds into sort of that honest, you know, authentic concept of food, that so the architecture is reflecting, you know, the food product. And that's a great way of doing it. Even for sometimes it's not about the rustic look. I mean, at Minibar, the domes over the minibars are actually made from the hulls of an old sailboat. They were reclaimed and cut out of the side, and those are reclaimed, but you don't it's not part of a rustic theme.
Right, there's no sense of that.
Yeah, it's a very modern contemporary space. But you know, the work that we did, you know, with Blackjack and reclaming and finding things.
It was all about found objects. Would you guys just go, like, trolling? Like, are you hunting?
For that part,
are you guys pickers?
Yeah. We're hoarders. Our whole office is just hoarded objects waiting.
Hunting and gathering.
Yeah. I mean, is that what you do? Like, are you just, like,
you look for items or, you know, you create relationships with great artists that know how to recreate things. That's one of the really inspiring things for us, is the people that you meet along the way in the design process. And each concept will take you in a different path when you're searching for different things. You know, the thing about Blackjack and Pearl Dive was like, all right, there's a monkey on the floor. There's mermaids over here. We've got a tattooed lady on the bar front,
right.
You know, and then at Minibar, you're sourcing these domes from a boat builder. You just meet so many interesting people along the way, and you build on all those relationships you have to pull where you need to for different concepts. So
well,
it's exciting.
We have to wrap you guys up, but just very quickly, if you could see, think of one trend that you think we could see maybe in the next couple of years at some upcoming restaurants. What do you think one or two of the bigger trends are going to be?
Ooh, I'm hoping that it goes maybe a little bit away from the reclaimed wood and bare light bulbs that we see like everywhere now.
With the Edison bulbs?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
they're
just, it's like, okay,
I'm officially
enough.
Stating it.
I do have
enough.
A Graffiato.
All right, I'm sorry.
They have
the
a beautiful
bulbs.
Glow.
But
change
a Graffiato glow for a couple of years.
Okay. Change the bulbs.
But
no,
I'm hoping
I love
for
that
something
look,
more
but
contemporary.
Like everybody has. Yeah. Like it's in my daughter's room,
shades.
For Christ's sake.
Shades,
I mean, it's enough.
Yeah.
Maybe light shades are back. Okay. The thing we've been seeing, and a lot of it is because there's been so many great standalone restaurants that have, you know, come around in the, you know, DMV region, that the hotel work that we're seeing recently is where they're taking, you know, their
really
restaurant in their lobby. Yeah, they're really focusing on trying to make, you know, quality restaurant spaces in all these hospitality environments. So that's kind of an interesting one for us, too.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, thank you both so much for joining us today. It's been great having
you
in. All right, Derek, we're going to bring you back up to the mic.
All right. Hello.
Hi. All right. So
you're welcome.
So, Derek, we talked a little bit about sherry. You're pouring another one that looks totally different from the last one.
Yes. This one is an Amontillado, and everyone should say this. It is Amontillado.
Amontillado.
Like, because Montiato. It is one of the biggest mispronounced words. It's hard to say. I know. My cat is named Amontillado, so that kind of helps. But yeah, so
I don't know what to say about that. Go ahead.
Says I probably drink too much. Listen, so the thing is that sherry is such a diverse group of wines when you really think about it. It's not just one wine or two wines. It's actually a whole range of wines going from the extremely dry to the very sweet. And so there's two main styles in it. One is the in terms of the dry wines, and one is the kind of like lighter crisp ones. It's still richer than your average white wine, but it's usually served cold, and it's, you know, got kind of more white wine characteristics. Then you move into something like Amontillado, Pelo Cortado, and Oloroso, and this starts to get the oxidative aging, meaning that it's exposed to oxygen in barrels. And so it gets much richer and much more intense, and the color gets darker. That's usually served at room temperature.
Okay.
So the Amontillado, and some people actually have heard of it because of the famous Edgar Allan Poe story, The Cask of Amontillado, but it's usually dry, and it's rich, and it has some kind of whiskey-like aspects. It's got these whiskey lactones that you get, or dried figs, dried coconut. And it's amazing. It's traditionally served with soups, a great pairing with that. But it's also just great with grilled meat. It's great with a whole range of foods. So this one is definitely much richer. This is by Barbadillo. Okay. And Barbadillo is in San Lucar de Barrameda. That's not far from Chipiona, the first fino that we had. And so it's also near the water. So you also get kind of like this almost salted caramel from this. Not this. It's not sweet, but you get that sort of salted caramel, which I think is wonderful and goes really well with the walnut brittle.
Okay, great. All right, we're going to take a quick break.
Sure.
When we come back, we are going to get into Will Artley's bacon biscuits, whatever those things are over there. And we're going to talk about Fit for Hope. This is Nikki Nellis and Mike Isabella, who's been weirdly quiet for the last 20 minutes.
I'm sorry. I'll talk a lot more
now. Yeah, he's coming back. All right, we'll be back in just a sec.
Signs, so subtle we may not notice them. Signs like loss of interest in activities. Signs like insomnia, fatigue, or withdrawing from friends.
Hey, dearie, come play cards with us.
Even talking about wanting to die. These are signs of depression.
Hi, my name is Smitty. My husband, Congressman Jerry Connolly, and I urge you to take signs of depression seriously. Let your loved one know you care, then seek help from a doctor or mental health professional.
Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Hey, Mom, why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
The odds of becoming a signed artist and having 3 number one albums? 1 in 100 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of this performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Each day, over 49 million Americans live in households that experience hunger, including 17 million children. Johnson's Florist and Garden Centers want to help. They're asking gardeners in the Washington area to plant extra this growing season, and at harvest time, bring that extra to one of their stores in D.C., Kensington, and Olney, Maryland. All donations will go to a local organization that feeds the hungry. Visit johnsonsflorist.com to learn more about the Plant a Row for the Hungry initiative. johnsonsflorist.com.
Welcome back to Foodie and the Beast. I am snacking on something. What am I eating, Derek? What is this?
This is walnut brittle.
Oh my God, it is so good.
Good.
It's delicious. All right, so we're snacking on that, sipping on sherry, and now I'm going to throw the ball to Mike and let him introduce our next guest.
Well, I'd like to welcome my friend and kind of counterpartner right now is Sarah Cox. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, Sarah Cox is with the American Cancer Society. And Sarah, you are behind this push for Fit for Hope.
Fit for Hope, which is our, we just developed it this year to go along with our Taste of Hope event. Taste of Hope's been going on in Manhattan for about 8 years. Mm-hmm. And the American Cancer Society decided with the bustling food scene we had here in D.C. to bring it to D.C. So we just found Mike. So lucky.
Well, what was, tell us a little bit about, I mean, I want to hear from both of you. How did this idea come to be? I mean, explain to people, Mike, why don't you tell people what Fit for Hope is?
Well, Fit for Hope, you know,
you don't have to rub your tummy when you're doing
well,
it.
Well, okay. It has to do with a little bit of obesity and obesity, you know, kind of, you know, cancer kind of can come through that. So, you know, a lot of us chefs, we work a lot. We eat and sometimes drink a lot, and we're not all in the best shape. So I just thought it would be a good thing to kind of, you know, come together with a bunch of chefs and mixologists and industry people to, you know, to kind of get a little bit healthier, you mm-hmm. know, and help raise money and put something together for Fit for Hope and work together with them to, you know, to raise money. And that's kind of where...
Well, Sarah, tell us what's involved with this Fit for Hope. What do you have to do as a chef or mixologist?
Of course. And a little bit to more background, the American Cancer Society has been doing research over the last 100 years that has really tied obesity, nutrition, and wellness to cancer risk. So just to back up.
What kind of cancers? Are there specific cancers that are attributed to obesity?
All kinds of cancers. I mean, it's just kind of one of these comorbidities. If you're obese, your risk for a secondary cancer diagnosis in any field goes up significantly.
Wow.
So
because you hear about diabetes and you hear about heart disease, but you don't really hear about cancer being related to obesity as much.
Yeah. Well, and the study that we did in the 60s really showed that. And what we looked at was like a large cohort of folks and their cancer risk. So it was lung, colon, you know, leukemia, blood cancers, breast cancers, everything goes up just simply because your body's working overtime just deal with what it's carrying around.
Mm-hmm.
So the Fit for Hope Challenge, what we had is, you know, we asked Mike to be our honoree. He graciously accepted that. And when we started to talk about what can we do to make this event a little different, because there's so many taste events going on in DC, we really wanted to be unique.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we sat and kind of collaborated about Fit for Hope, what would that mean? We thought, let's do a 12-week challenge leading up to Taste of Hope with a goal of getting 10 chefs and mixologists to participate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everybody just flooded us. We got, you know, we had 18 people at one point. We're dropped down to 16.
Who dropped out?
No, we can't ask who dropped out.
We won't throw
it.
Let's
talk
call them out. Who dropped out?
We want to know who's like, you know, rocking and rolling right now. That's what we want to know.
And next year we'll get them to participate for sure. So during that 12-week challenge, we have three dedicated trainers, Jason Yu, Monica Pampel, and Shauna Bryant, who have really led the charge on. They have teams. So we have Team Jason and Team Monica. Shauna's supporting both teams.
Okay.
And so they're meeting twice a week with...
So right now you guys are in two teams.
Two teams. The winning team, which is Team Jason.
Wait, so Derek is not on Team Jason?
Definitely not.
Okay.
I'm going to be on the winning team Monica.
But we have, you know, with that, so they're getting twice a week, weekly training sessions, group training sessions, and then Vita Fitness has been a wonderful partner on this event, providing supplemental training, giving each chef and mixologist the opportunity to work out in any Vita gym for 12 weeks for free.
That's a gift.
Yeah, it's really been incredible. And then, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about it, but a lot of them have gone even outside of that to increase their fitness and nutrition during this 12-week
challenge.
Are you
providing nutrition advice to them as well?
So Monica Pampel, one of our trainers, is also a nutritionist. So she's kind of outlined, and I know that Jason and each one of the team captains is really kind of pointing the chefs and mixologists in the direction of what they should and shouldn't be doing. But we found that most of these guys, because they love food, we know we didn't want them to compromise taste or food. It was just more about how do we get healthier overall. And
portion so control.
Exactly. I think they're all doing a great job.
Right.
So what's going on with the gala?
Sure. Yeah. So we have more than 30 chefs and mixologists committed for Taste of Hope DC. And I think that it's interesting for people to see the relationship between the two. So Fit for Hope, we have the 16 chefs. They're going to be in our VIP room for Taste of Hope. So with your VIP ticket, you're going to get early entry.
The skinnier, more svelte chefs.
Oh, exactly. It's going to be a beautiful group.
Right.
The skinny Will and the skinny Mike. Derek's already skinny. Yeah. I mean, come on now.
But so all those...
Derek's cheating.
He is.
All of the Fit for Hope chefs will be in that VIP room, and then we're going to have the rest of our participants spread throughout the Carnegie Library. So our venue is the Carnegie Library. It's September 24th.
Okay. And this is open to the public.
It is open to the public. You can buy your tickets at www.tasteofhopedc.org.
Mm-hmm.
And all of your participating chefs and mixologists will have pieces of collateral invitations in their restaurants in the next few weeks.
Okay, to let people know about it.
Yeah, and follow us on Twitter, ACS Taste of Hope. There's, you know, just a ton going on, so we're really excited.
And aren't there a bunch of events as well that the chefs are doing?
Yeah, thank you.
Mike, aren't they doing a bunch of events?
Well, we're helping to raise money also, too, for Fit for Hope.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I mean, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
And Derek and Will, so are you guys, how much money do you have to bring to the table to participate?
I mean, at least $2,500 is the goal.
So, are you asking people to sponsor you? Is that what you guys are doing?
No,
or are you just writing the check yourselves?
I've done multiple things. You know, first, I have industry night the first Monday of every month at Graffiato. So we take proceeds at the door, $10 to get in, and it's or you can eat, you know, food from the chef.
I've been there.
And
I know what it's like.
And
it's
we take 50% of that and give that to Fit for Hope.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then also to my opening day of G Sandwich on Friday, I took all proceeds. We offered all the sandwiches for $5, and we gave all the giving all the proceeds for Fit for Hope. So I'm already at I think it's like
$2,000 already.
Almost $2,000. And then I have on August 5th, we have industry night again, which is Latin night.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of great chefs coming down for that. And, you know, the proceeds will be going for Fit for Hope. And I also have two sandwiches on the menu at Graffiato, healthy sandwiches, like a chicken salad sandwich, a roasted turkey sandwich. And $2 from every sandwich that's sold goes to Fit for Hope. So I'm doing a bunch of different things through my restaurants to raise money.
And what are you guys doing? Derek, Will, what are you doing?
Well, I've partnered with Todd Thrasher, so we're going to get together and do two bartending events, one at Restaurant Eve and then the other one at The Passenger. Mm-hmm. So it's actually the 7th anniversary of Restaurant Eve, and so I'm going to go over there and make cocktails on August 19th. And on the 26th, Todd is going to come to The Passenger, and we're going to, you know, make cocktails.
It up.
Yeah, exactly.
And what about you, Will? What are you doing?
We've done a couple of things. One of the things is we wanted to do something that was obviously put something on our menu, like Mike. So I followed his lead. And because we do a sourdough, so we created a whole wheat sour. So in order to make a whole wheat dough, so percentages from that pizza sold goes to obviously Fit for Hope. And then I have people who are sponsoring me per pound. Some people do 5. Some people, like one of my friends did 10. I just told him he better save some money because it's coming off. So.
Well, so we'll get back to Fit for Hope at the end of the show. But, Will, since you're up at the mic, why don't we get into you and what you're doing at Pizzeria Orso. You've been there how long now?
I've been there about a year and a half now, mm-hmm. which has been pretty incredible.
So let's talk about how you dive into a restaurant that sort of already was open and sort of already had its umbrella of what it was supposed to be, and how you as a chef dive in and make it your own.
Yeah, I mean, it was everybody knows that Orso opened as the best pizzeria considered in the country, like on the east side. Like, mm-hmm. you know, Eden was and is an amazing talent as far as it comes to pizza. And as soon as he left, everybody left it to dead. Like, Sitsuma took the 3 stars away, left him with no stars, and people just walked away from it. So when I found it,
I don't have to say the obvious here, especially in this room. I mean, that guy doesn't. He makes incredible pizzas. Don't get me wrong, but he doesn't have a track record. He doesn't stay anywhere very long.
Right, but I didn't. For me, it's like we share the same love. So right. I can't. I usually don't compare myself to other chefs because we love the same thing. Mm-hmm. So I think so. For me, my focus was, you know, when I met the owners, they said, would you just look at, you know, check out our restaurant? I said, of course. So when I found, I more or less looked at the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So my key was not to focus in on the food and what we can change in the restaurant, but learning more about our neighborhood, finding out what our neighborhood wanted and what it needed. So the saying goes, like, behind every great chef, there's a better crew. Behind every great restaurant is a better neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So I knew if we establish ourselves in the neighborhood, that no matter what stars we got, we would always be supported by our neighborhood. So
what were you looking to dish out other than pizza? I mean, or what were you bringing to the pizza? I mean, tell me how that works.
What I bring to the pizza is, I mean, I have a master's certificate in artisan bread. I like the old school about artisan bread, like, mm-hmm. you know, wood fired, the chemistry behind about doing sourdough. Like, you can put yeast, you can make a yeast dough. It's pretty easily. I mean, anybody can do that.
Mike wouldn't know anything about it.
Right.
Like,
well, sourdough.
I've never made a pizza before.
Yeah. And now you do great ones. So, so, you know, sour is a beast in its own, and it's constantly changing. And every single day it's different. You know, people come in, they're like, it was different, you know, a week ago. Of course it is. Because, you know, it's alive, it's building, and it's changing. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, our dough at Graffiato, I mean, we put 25% of our dough, we take it out every day and then put it back in the next day. And our dough has been alive for 2.5 years now almost. And your pizza changes from day one to year one to year two. And that's what his I'm sure, is very similar to that too.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, so for people who don't understand, and I don't want to stay on this too long, but I am interested personally. I mean, for people who don't understand how a food item can stay alive for so long, I mean, it doesn't go bad?
No, it's just part of fermentation.
Right.
It's like a beer. Like,
right.
Like, you know,
or
alcohol.
Bourbon.
Or bourbon.
Or sherry.
Or sherry. Right? God, we're going so full circle. I love how that happens. Well, and that's not all you do. It's not just pizza. So talk about how you expanded the menu.
You know, we wanted to focus in on not necessarily small plates, but I wanted to offer I wanted to be the powerhouse restaurant in Virginia. Obviously, the neighborhood wanted that, but they wanted options. So I do everything from octopus to scallops to mussels to a lot of vegetarian dishes. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, I've actually been called the Mike Isabella of Virginia.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, which I'm okay with. I'm okay with that. Like, everybody, a lot of people who come from D.C., they're like, it's a lot like Graffiato. And I was like, well.
That's a compliment.
Yeah.
We all love what we do, and we all love good food, so, right. You know.
Very nice. All right, so lastly, tell us about your summer menus.
My summer menus are coming out now. Obviously, we wait until our farmers and our local, you know, farmers market comes out, and then we put them out. So we're a little behind this year, but they're coming out now. So
okay.
A lot of fresh pastas.
I love
stuff
pasta.
Like that. Yeah.
I haven't had it though
in like 6 weeks.
I can't wait to eat pasta again.
So when we come back, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about how Mike and Will, I mean, George, you don't have to diet because you're so tall and skinny, and Derek all are doing Fit for Hope, and how you each are losing weight and making it happen and participating in the process. So this is Nikki Nellis and Mike Isabella with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
Live music, health screenings, food, fitness demos, and more, all at Community Day 2013, and all free. Yes, that's free. Join the Federal City Alumni Chapter of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Incorporated, on Saturday, August 10th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the ARC in Southeast Washington for this annual event set to engage and foster health, education, and political awareness. For more information about Community Day 2013, visit the FCACDST.org.
You may think modern-day slavery doesn't happen, but human trafficking is in every country, state, and neighborhood, even yours. Still, there are more people held in slavery today than any other time in human history. Breaking Out Corporation is a proactive anti-human trafficking organization that investigates, identifies, and brings victims home. You have the power. Go beyond just talk. BreakingOutCorp.org needs your help to free human beings from sex trafficking and slavery. Find out how you can help by going to BreakingOutCorp.org.
Escape the everyday to the close by Early Mountain Vineyards in Madison, Virginia. A relaxing getaway just a short drive from D.C., it has an award-winning tasting room, breathtaking views of the Blue Ridge, and the best of Virginia wines, locally grown food, live music, and slow sunsets. Visit earlymountain.com or follow them on Twitter at Early Mountain. Mention Foodie and the Beast and this ad for a free flight of wines at your next visit.
If talking and texting interferes with a walk down the street, imagine what might happen if you're driving. Focus on the road, not your conversation. Your brain can't do both safely. No dialing, no talking, no texting to arrive safe.
Hi, I'm Brooke Delaney.
And I'm Congressman John Delaney.
As a teen, I know not to text while driving. My dad and I ask you to focus on the road, not your conversation.
This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
This is Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. I have guest host Mike Isabella here with me. David Nellis is out and about doing his thing. Hopefully he's hanging things in the house and cleaning up after the dogs.
Is he hanging out at the pool, you know, getting some suntan right now with his glasses on?
Yeah, exactly. How'd you know what he was doing? All right, so, Derek is breaking in. Breaking in to Will Hartley's Big. Will, what did you bring us? Tell us what you brought us.
So I brought us a bacon sticky bun.
Bacon sticky bun. So
what with tradition, it's actually quite light.
No, it's not. That's such a lie.
So it's one of the side dishes over at Orzo.
It's delicious.
So send me the recipe, please.
Yeah, all over.
And then people will say to Mike, you're like the Will Hartley of D.C.
Of D.C. Exactly. Exactly.
All right. So here's what I want to do. I want to talk about Fit for Hope. I mean, we have three. Derek, why don't you come up here to the mic, please? So we've got three of you guys in here, and you're all participating in this. Derek, well, how did you guys get involved? Oh, look, he's like, sorry to see you. How did you guys get involved? And what are you each personally looking to come out? I mean, other than just losing weight, I mean, what are you looking to do with this?
You know, for me, it was, if you don't mind me going first, for me, it's kind of like my world.
You got the mic first, you win.
My world came to in first full circle. My wife's a nutritionist. She's a health and wellness guru. She works with people with eating disorders and everything. So she's been pushing me for 6 years, not pushing me, but just telling me, you know, educating me. And obviously she's like my wife and I don't just listen to her. So, and then they came out with
it. He just doesn't listen to her.
Yeah, I just don't listen to her.
Say that in
you
a
know?
Different way. She's my wife.
She knows. She tells me every day.
That's what you should be saying.
Let's keep it real.
Okay.
You know, it's one of those things where, and I don't want to get into politics too much, but they came out with obesity being a disability now. And the first thing that clicked in my head was, you know, my dad is disabled. He was in Vietnam twice, and my dad is my hero. My dad has shrapnel in his back. He can barely walk, and his hands are shattered. And that's why he's disabled. And when and I was in, like, shock. I was like, I'm not disabled. I'm lazy. Like, I choose to be this way. So that's when I was like, you know, I want to do this. That next day, I got an email from Mike asking me to be in this. So
serendipity.
Yeah. So it all kind of worked out, and it all came full circle. So my hopes now, what has developed in almost a 40-pound loss in like 6 weeks.
That's amazing.
For me, is instead of, you know, my philosophy before was I want to be great. I want to be great. I want to be one of the best chefs in the country. And it's all, now it's like flipped, and I feel like my legacy is built around who I influence and who I can make great and who I can make, you know, aware. So
right.
And it's not about me anymore. It's about other people and using, you know, Mike's influence of being on TV, creating good food to influence other people.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this whole Fit for Hope thing, yes, we're, you know, we're all competing to lose weight and do it for cause and try to become healthier. But it is a life change. You know, you have to focus on, you know, knowing that it's going to, you know, like you're going to continue to do this after it's all, after the competition is over, and you have to.
Put your headphones on. Are you working out?
Yes, I'm working out.
I think I have somebody on the phone who says you're not working out.
I was at the gym the other day, and it was recorded.
Hi, is Scott Trudeau on the phone?
I'm in trouble over here. I got two of my teammates. One's eating bacon donuts, and one just opened a sandwich shop. What am I doing over here?
Well, listen, I am 26 pounds lighter in second place, buddy.
I'm going to start eating sandwiches then. To hell with the yogurt.
Scott, how are you doing on your diet?
I'm good. I'm 12 pounds down, but it's been good. It's a great experience to work out with everybody, and it's a good life change for all of us, I guess.
Okay, great. And so how do you think Mike's been doing this morning as my co-host since you've been in the seat before?
Well, I got to rate him above the beast, but possibly below me is the other co-host.
Okay. Well, Scott, thank you for the quick call. And so you're not giving Mike a hard time. You saying that, like, he's working out, he's doing his thing?
Yeah, I have full faith in the team. We're all doing it our own way, so we'll be good at the end. And make sure you give that bacon donut to Derek Brown.
I gave him two.
Derek Brown has got a bacon biscuit or whatever it is, sticky bun right in front of his face. Don't worry.
Nothing full.
All right, Scott.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Okay, so Scott Trudeau wanted to just throw it out there that he's involved and he's on. He was my co-host once upon a time when David was out on another day. All right, so Derek, what about you? What are you doing?
Well, I just don't think we're going to garner a lot of sympathy for this, but as restaurant professionals, as bar owners, we actually drink and eat a lot. Mm-hmm. And so
every day,
drinking 1,000 empty calories a night can can really put on the pounds. And I think that, you know, you realize at a certain point that you have to be healthy and you have to encourage that in other people for your own longevity. And because it requires a great deal of energy to be a bar or restaurant owner, you have to do a lot of work and you have to be prepared to roll up your sleeves. And I think that that's was a big part for me that I started to get older. I started to put on a little extra weight and I started to get sort of lose a little energy. And so now that I'm hitting the gym and I've lost 10 pounds, I feel, you know, much more energetic. I feel, you know, every day I'm kind of easier to get up. And so I think that that's the key for me. I did want to mention, sorry, I did say that the 7th anniversary was at Restaurant Eve earlier.
Right.
It's actually at PX.
Oh,
and so
PX,
you can go to
sense.
Events at eatgoodfoodgroup.com to make a reservation for that.
And I also have every event that's going on with Fit for Hope, all the extra events that everybody's doing. Derek's, Mike's, Victor, LB Sue's doing one, Will, whatever you're doing. Everybody's is on the list or you want it.com. So you can totally stay in touch with what's happening there. Just lastly, Sarah, I mean, what are you hoping? Like, what do you guys hope comes out of all these chefs? I mean, aside from everybody losing weight and raising money, I mean, are you hoping they stick with it? Are you hoping to create more partnerships out of it? What are you looking for?
Of course. Yeah. And I do want to say, you know, Mike's just been a phenomenal first year chairman for this event. He's in second place. He's raising the most money for us. So we just
who's
want to
winning?
Thank him.
Who's winning?
Yeah. So